deaths. The country's prime minister, Stefan Löfven, says he agrees with the king and that the number of people who have died of COVID-19 can't be considered anything but a failure. French President Emmanuel Macron says it's very likely he was infected with COVID-19 during last week's EU summit in Brussels. Macron is self-isolating for the next few days after testing positive on Thursday. The country's prime minister, Jean Castex, has also announced he'll be entering self-isolation because he had been in contact with the president. In February, a father and son in the U.S. state of Georgia chased down Ahmed Arbery, a young black man who had been out jogging. Under the pretense, he had been breaking into a house that had been under construction. After they stopped him, the son, Travis McMichael, shot and killed Arbery with a shotgun. For more, let's bring in Richard Sudan. Richard, bring us up to speed.
So, as your introduction rightly alluded to, most people are viewing this as a modern-day lynching, and Ahmed Arbery was the victim of that. Now, three men are implicated in Ahmed Arbery's killing, father and son Gregory and Travis McMichael, and also Roddy Bryan. Three men, two trucks, and they basically ambushed Ahmed Arbery, armed with a shotgun. Now, those three people I mentioned have been charged with Ahmed Arbery's murder. An interesting piece of video has emerged between an exchange between the police and Travis McMichael right after Ahmed Arbery was killed.
So the man who is drenched in Arbery's blood is getting empathy from the police there.
Exactly, that's one of the things we've learned. He's getting empathy. I can't imagine what you've been through. Take a breath. We've also learned that the police apparently didn't initially attend Ahmed Arbery when they reached the murder scene. And so, you know, this is the trial that's happening right now. And of course, we should also mention the McMichaels are accused of using racial language, racial abuse towards Ahmed Arbery after they shot him, just to give people the seriousness and the gravitas of this case.
And Richard, maybe briefly comment on like the grand scheme of things here, the fact that more and more black folks are getting killed at the hands of police. And every time we come on this program, we're talking about one such instance.
So this is an epidemic by all serious accounts across America right now. You've had a number of people literally been victims of suspected lynchings over the summer, about 12 people. You've had black people literally dying at the hands of the state every other day. And a lot of people are highlighting the potentiality, corroboration between white militia, white racist nationalists, and law enforcement in the U.S. So it's kind of an unprecedented situation right now, I would say.
Unprecedented. All right. Tell us what people have been saying about this.
I want to go to a reaction from Don't Scare, firstly, who says, and the police said to the killer after seeing him covered in blood, that's fine. Like I said, just take a breath. Really, wow. This is not what George Floyd was allowed to do. And Black Lives tweets, Ahmed Arbery was still breathing when the police officer declared him dead. Imagine the situation.
Yeah, imagine the situation indeed. Your second story now, Richard, as the world continues to battle coronavirus and its fallout, what's happening with the refugees on Greek islands, such as those displaced by the fire that engulfed the overpopulated Mario camp earlier this year?
So you've got a deeply disturbing and distressing situation afflicting refugees across Greece, but across three of the Greek islands, including Lesbos. And basically, there's been a report done by the International Rescue Committee, and they've said there's been a massive 70% spike in very serious psychotic trauma experienced by those refugees, including PTSD, suicidal thoughts, and just general psychological trauma. To give you an idea of the number of people this is affecting, there's about 17,000 refugees spread out over these islands. and things were already bad there. I mean, these camps are rife with abuse. There's already no legal, health, economic or social provision for these refugees, and they've just been left to languish in these camps. They're treated like a political football between Europe's politicians who argue about where they should go. And of course, you know, many European countries have played a leading role in causing the displacement of these refugees in terms of wars in places like Syria and Iraq, for example. And so a lot of people would say, you know, European nations have a moral, if not a legal duty, to safeguard the well-being of these people. Many of them are children. I mean, there was a recent report of a three-year-old Afghan girl being raped in one of these camps. This is how serious it is.
It definitely is. Any reaction to this story online?
Thankfully, a lot of people are expressing support with the refugees, as is Summons Online, who says solidarity with the people in Greece's refugee camps, and On the Ground says shops in Greece refusing to accept cash from refugees, pay by card, only choice, and a minimum of €250 charge per time introduced. These people are profiting from the people who have zero way to legally earn money.
And all of this happening in the coldest season of the year. Richard Sedan with those stories. Richard, thank you. And that does it for this London broadcast, everyone.
In the limelight.
By handing out masks late, forcing detained people into close quarters, refusing to release the medically vulnerable, not reporting infections, testing inadequately, frequently transferring detainees and pressuring staff and guards to continue working despite compromised health, USICE's handling of the pandemic has led to over 7,000 reported positive cases and at least 8 coronavirus-related deaths among detained people, says John Washington, writer, in an article published under the heading, USICE Mismanagement Created Coronavirus Hotbeds of Infection in and Around Detention Centers. Stay tuned for the details of this article. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement's response to the COVID-19 pandemic has been a horrifying and avoidable calamity. By handing out masks late, forcing detained people into close quarters, refusing to release the medically vulnerable, not reporting infections, testing inadequately, frequently transferring detainees and pressuring staff and guards to continue working despite compromised health, ICE's handling of the pandemic has led to over 7,000 reported positive cases and at least 8 coronavirus-related deaths among detained people. A new report from Detention Watch Network finds that the dire situation inside also led to wider consequences. When a spread in the communities surrounding detention centers is included, ICE's sprawling incarceration system added nearly 250,000 cases to the total U.S. caseload. The WN report, Hotbeds of Infection, released recently, lays bare how ICE's abundant failures and dilatory mismanagement killed and infected people inside detention centers and significantly contributed to the spread of COVID-19 cases across the U.S. By August 1st, almost 5.5% of total U.S. cases, according to the report, were attributable to spread from ICE detention centers. The report is yet another damning indication that ICE's dereliction in protecting basic human rights, grievous medical neglect, and lack of transparency in how it detains and treats people in its system of over 200 detention centers is a massive public health threat, both to detainees and the greater U.S. population. The impact of ICE's failure to adequately respond to the pandemic was far-reaching and multi-layered, the WN report says. Even as COVID-19 cases have surged across the U.S., ICE has ramped up enforcement activities, creating a recipe for disaster for those in detention and surrounding communities. The report's authors were at pains to explain that it is not immigrants who spread disease, but rather the immigration detention regime, the nature of incarceration and all it entails, that forces disease and sickens migrants and communities alike. It is setting up ideal lab conditions for incubating viruses and putting them out into the community, said Gregory Hooks, a professor of sociology at McMaster University and co-author of DWN report. Dr. Ranit Mishori, a Georgetown University School of Medicine professor and senior medical advisor at Physicians for Human Rights, said, "The United States has a long history of scapegoating immigrants for the spread of infectious diseases, yet medical evidence suggests that punitive immigration enforcement, such as packing detention facilities or scaring immigrants away from accessing medical care, is the true threat to the public health." Daniel Bennett, an ICE spokesperson, told The Intercept that since the outbreak, the agency has taken extensive steps to safeguard all detainees, staff, and contractors, including reducing the number of detainees in custody by placing individuals on alternatives to detention programs, suspending social visitation, incorporating social distancing practices with staggered meals and recreation times, and through the use of testing, cohorting, and medical isolation. Between May 1st and August 1st, the DWN report found ICE detention facilities were responsible for over 245,000 COVID-19 cases throughout the U.S. If a separate country had reported the number of COVID-19 cases attributed just to ICE detention facilities at that point, it would have ranked 16th in the world, having a higher case rate than Germany, France, and Canada. The infection rate inside immigration detention centers was 13 times higher than that of the general U.S. population, which would have, taken together, made them by far the most contagious country in the world, according to the World Health Organization stats. Hotbeds of infection takes advantage of county-level data on coronavirus infections made available by the New York Times. The authors examined links between ICE detention facilities and confirmed cases of COVID-19 in nearby counties. Focusing on initial spread of COVID-19 and based on logistic regression modeling, the report provides evidence that COVID-19 arrived sooner, in April and May, and outbreaks were more severe in counties with ICE facilities as well as in neighboring counties. Over the summer, there was a sharp contrast between counties situated in multi-county economic areas with a high number of people detained by ICE and counties situated in areas with fewer people detained. As the pandemic spiraled out of control over the summer, the healthcare system in economic areas with a significant ICE presence were burdened by thousands of additional COVID-19 cases. Recognizing that other factors besides the presence of detention centers contribute to increased COVID-19 cases, the authors included a range of control variables, including but not limited to the presence of nursing homes. meat packing plants, other high-density living quarters including prisons, military bases or universities, population density, and the percentage of non-white populations who continue to suffer the worst of the pandemic. After taking into account these other variables, the analysis showed a statistically significant relationship between the presence of an ICE detention center and the exacerbation of the COVID-19 outbreak in the surrounding multi-county area. The advocacy group Freedom for Immigrants reports that over half of immigration detention centers in the U.S. are currently reporting coronavirus outbreaks. According to WN report, California, Texas, and Arizona had by far the most COVID-19 cases resulting from the presence of ICE detention facilities. ICE wasn't only responsible for imperiling people detained and for spreading the virus to surrounding communities. It was also spreading the virus abroad. By continuing deportations, even while the U.S.-Mexico border was almost completely shut down for migrants and asylum seekers, ICE exported the virus to Guatemala, Haiti, Mexico, El Salvador, and India, all countries with few intensive care beds, few respirators, and relatively meager health systems, particularly vulnerable to viral spread. Last spring, at one point, people deported from the United States made up as much as 20% of all known COVID-19 cases in Guatemala. In 2020 fiscal year, ICE deported 164,455 people from the U.S., potentially sending thousands or even tens of thousands of cases throughout the world. Attorneys, advocates, detainees, and even judges began sounding the alarm about COVID-19 cases in immigration detention system in March, but ICE failed to heed the calls to take significant preventive measures. Early on the pandemic, the Philadelphia Inquirer reported that ICE was not providing detainees with proper information about the coronavirus. The Intercept reported that a detention center in Georgia, while engaging in a host of medically dangerous practices, was ignoring and underreporting coronavirus cases. In April, a federal judge ordered ICE to consider a release of all detainees over the age of 55 due to risks from coronavirus, ruling that ICE has shown medical indifference and put people with serious medical conditions or disabilities at substantial risk of harm. Overall, though, very few people were released. Thousands got sick. Meanwhile, medical staff, administrators, vendors, visitors, and guards have been bringing the virus into detention centers across the U.S. and carrying out the virus out, with ICE doing little and sometimes nothing to contain the spread on both sides of the bars. Immigration detention centers, the report grimly notes, have been among the deadliest of public institutions during the COVID-19 pandemic. The U.S. immigration detention system has a history of medically neglect, dehumanizing, squalid, and sometimes deadly conditions, including previous viral outbreaks that far predate the COVID-19 crisis. Just in fiscal year 2020, a total of 20 people died in ICE detention centers. For years, experts have repeatedly condemned the agency for violating basic health standards, keeping detained people locked up for prolonged periods, abusing them, even torturing them, and placing them at high risk for mental and physical decline. In 2019, the House Committee on Oversight and Reform and its Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties began investigating troubling report of in-custody death of adults and children, as well as deficient medical care, improper treatment, and filthy conditions at facilities operated by both ICE and Customs and Border Protection and other immigration enforcement agency under the umbrella of Department of Homeland Security. They found a widespread failure to provide necessary medical care to detainees with serious and chronic medical conditions, along with critical medical staff shortages. The conditions, in other words, were perfect for a rapacious virus to take hold. Hotbeds of infection is the first report to build on the investigations into the dangers within detention centers and looks closely at the risks they pose to communities where they are located. Evidence points to detention centers sparking infections early in the pandemic and making outbreaks worse, the report says. The multi-county area surrounding detention centers with the highest number of people detained saw a 20% increase in COVID-19 caseloads. Hooks, the report co-author, said, "I think of prisons and detention centers as ongoing super spreader of events."
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm your host, Mudaffar Haider. And here in the studio today, we have with us Syed Mahdi and Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
How are you both doing? We're living in interesting times today, aren't we?
Yes, we are. That is for sure. Interesting times indeed.
It is 2020. This is the year of all years. And there has never been a year like this before. And everybody's feeling it. People are changing sides. Have you noticed that? People were on one side, but now they're like, hold on a second. A lot more people are waking up to some of the realities. I fear it's a bit too late. But there's still room for, you know, making amends. Anyway, we're talking about the voting system, if you haven't clocked on already. And I just want to throw this premise out there and see what you guys do with it. This premise is that governments are becoming more and more, as time goes on, obsolete. And you can hear this kind of catchphrase being shared around in mainstream media, as well as just from the lips of common people when you talk to them. That just governments just don't, they don't seem to be doing their function. They just seem to be really, really superfluous. So let's dive into this discussion. The whole idea of voting for a government and then them, you know, governing the country or the nation, what is going on? Nobody seems to have faith in it anymore. What's happening? I think I'm going to Sheikh Ali first.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So when it comes to voting, when it comes to having a government, of course, a human society requires some sort of management, and hence it requires managers to manage the society, right? Mm-hmm. There have to be laws governing the society. There's no two opinions about it. So when we have that established, now the question is what form and type of government, right? There are different models, and there have been different models throughout the history, outlining for people different structures of government, different power structures as well. Now, one of them, the most famous one in today's time and age, apparently, is liberal democracy. Mm-hmm. In last 200 years, you know, it started to built up, and slowly people started to get on board with the idea, because the idea on the surface level is pretty lucrative and attractive, right?
It does sound nice.
What is it? The idea which attracted people is that, oh, I have a say in having, you know, who rules me or who doesn't, right? I have some sort of a opinion that I can express when it comes to electing or selecting my head of state. So, you know, people got excited, because remember, like, when you look at Christianity and how the world, you know, at least the Christian world was being ruled by the church, there was nothing like say of the people.
Right.
Right. So it was sort of a reaction to that whole sentiment, accumulated sentiment that, okay, church is always like my way or highway type of a attitude. So now we have value and way and a method of expressing our own choice.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the very bare bones understanding of a layman when it comes to democracy.
I mean, it does sound awfully beautiful, doesn't it, Sheikh?
It does, right?
A government for the people, by the people. You have a say in who's ruling over you. Gone are the days of tyranny and oppression. Gone are the days where
dictatorships and,
right,
you know,
kings just rule over you and you're just peasants and you have to do what you're told. No, now is your time.
Mm-hmm. So in 21st century, we stand tall with this whole model of democracy. Everybody seems to be happy till the time that the reality of this entire model, which was, as a matter of fact, a hoax, it was a deception, you know, would be a better and precise translation of what today's liberal democracy represents. It was a deception and it got unveiled. People started to realize that, okay, wait, yes, it seems like I signed up for it, but I didn't really sign up for it.
You did now for 4 years. You're exactly. Stuck with it. You're not allowed to do anything.
So now, yeah. You know, what needs to be understood here, you know, I know we are limited on time and we have limitations there.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to be understood is that when you talk about a model, there's a model and there's a foundation of the model.
Mm.
Both of these things have to be in sync with human nature.
Mm.
Now, this portion where, you know, my say and my opinion and my vote came in, apparently, on the surface level, it seemed in sync with the human nature. But what about the foundation? This is where the liberal democracy went wrong, and this is exactly what they hid from people for, like, you know, they were hiding it for decades and over a century, to say the least, because liberal democracy is no more than 200 years ago that it took birth, right? So in this a little over a century that it established and gained popularity, nobody questioned the roots of this liberal democracy.
Yeah, it's been pretty well embedded into the minds of the masses, especially in the West,
right,
that it is the way.
So it turns out to be, except for very few people who understood it from the get-go, what this model has to offer and where it is going to take humanity and human society. So, you know, what got unveiled is that this entire model, the foundation of it, was built on lust, self-interest, greed, hunger, power, you know, all of these negative things that you can think of. A group of people at the foundation of this model and system were the beneficiaries. And this is what now the general public is starting to realize. So this is where we are at with liberal democracy.
Sayyid Mehdi, the foundations of liberal democracy is greed, lust, and oppression, and it's only there to just benefit a small group of people. What's your take on all of this?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Right, it is geared towards benefiting a small group of people. If you take a case in point, the elections in the United States of America, especially in the past few elections, which, you know, includes a couple of decades, right? Because a lot of these individuals are voted in twice for two terms. You will see that it is not the people directly who are electing these leaders. So, for example, specifically in the United States of America and most of these, you know, Western liberal democracy nations, you find that you need a campaign before you are elected to a post. Now, if you look at these campaigns, they are very, very expensive endeavors. It costs a lot
of
money.
Millions of dollars are pushed in, yep.
Right? Millions and millions of dollars in campaign
funding. So only a millionaire at least a millionaire.
Well,
would be
so
able to.
Here's the interesting thing. Interesting thing. A lot of these guys who are running for the position of president are not themselves billionaires, mm-hmm. right? So what happens? They need money.
Lobbies.
So right. where does the money come from? It's not, mm-hmm. you know, me and you and the sheikh giving $10, $15, $20. No, it is big groups, corporations, lobbies, special interest groups who put up millions and millions of dollars, if not hundreds and thousands of dollars, in order to sponsor a campaign for a person to become president who then works for who? The guy who paid him to get into the White House.
That is really beautifully put, and that makes so much sense. Now, I think one of the problems that we face is when we use words like lobbies and interest groups mm-hmm. and things like that, you just don't put a face to it, so it becomes something quite obscure.
Right. Because there are too many of them, right?
Right.
So, and the reason there are too many of them is because they don't want a face to be associated with a lobby. So, for instance, take AIPAC, right?
Uh-huh, the Israeli.
The American, Israeli, something, something, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the function of AIPAC operating in the United States of America? It is to look after the interest of the Zionist regime of Israel.
Wow.
Through what? American system, through American tax dollars,
wow.
through American money, through American resources, American security firms, right? So they, when they invest, let's say you're running for president, they invest for you. They pump in money, okay? AIPAC is going to throw money at you for your election campaign. Naturally, you're going to have to work for AIPAC, right?
Mm. I mean, it's quite interesting because we're going to have to change gears now. That
well, wait a minute. Before we change gears, because this AIPAC thing is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
If you just go, you know, and do some research on the internet and look for the types of speakers that have gone to speak at AIPAC conferences, most, if not all, of the people elected as presidents of the United States of America have been speakers at AIPAC conferences.
Wow.
So Donald Trump, even Hillary Clinton, Joseph Biden, Kamala Harris,
Obama,
President Obama, ex-President
Bush.
Obama, Bush. These are all, and really, if you go and you search, it's really amazing. Is why would you not go and talk to like the regular American people? Why are you taking time out to specifically go to AIPAC, which is openly calling itself a lobby for a specific small group of people and their interests?
Mm.
You know, it just all seems kind of fishy to me.
And what's important is, like, when it comes to places like AIPAC, it's just one example, by the way.
Right.
There are too many lobbies in the U.S. Now, when it comes to places like that, it is a commonly known phenomenon that if a president is to be elected for the United States of America, it is impossible for him or her to be elected unless there is AIPAC blessings with that candidate.
So
he has to be approved
right.
and supported by AIPAC candidate.
Otherwise, he won't make it very far.
He won't stand a
chance.
Right?
No. So,
I mean, another huge lobby, for example, is the National Rifle Association, the NRA.
Right.
Right. So let's, you know, we're not going to be labeled here as all we talk about is Zionism. No, it's a widespread thing. Lobbies. You have military industrial complex, which has multiple companies within it, whether it's like Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and Boeing and these guys, right? You have the National Rifle Association is a huge lobby that pays millions of dollars, you know, to certain candidates. You have the pharmaceutical industry, which is huge. You have the agriculture, the food production industry, like Monsanto and these guys, they are huge lobbies in the United States of America.
The military industrial complex, you know, that entire conglomerate, you know, they have to stand behind a candidate if he were to be elected and selected to be the president.
So I was watching a clip from CNN, and they brought a guest on who was talking, and he was criticizing Biden. He was criticizing, and he was saying that some of the people that he was bringing in, is they're actually bad people, they're corrupt, and etc. Because let's not forget, it's not just Trump, it's Biden as well. It's every American president. They've been pushed by these lobby groups. But anyway, the interesting thing is...
Yeah,
it's the system. The interesting thing is they cut him off, like, midway through his sentence.
Right.
So then I looked in the comments, and people were saying, look, CNN is just... You know, it's actually just pushing for its own democratic vote.
Yeah. The censorship is it's a known phenomenon now. So.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is there's a system behind the system, right? Sometimes in academic circles, it's known as the deep state, mm-hmm. right? It is the state that is controlling the apparent state. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like the deep state in the United States of America, okay, which tangent has hijacked the whole state of the United States of America, right? This is what a lot of people don't understand, is that the United States of America, the American people, have been hijacked by a deep state who works for their own interests, which mm-hmm. is what we were talking about. Now, it seems like the deep state has kind of, you know, understood or realized that the previous president, Donald Trump, has done a certain amount of damage to the image of the United States across the world, right? He came out of a lot of accords and, you know, causing fights with the Europeans and things like that. It seems like what they're trying to do is trying to make Joseph Biden, right, as a savior. If you look at a lot of his speeches and you look at his statements, mm-hmm. he keeps on saying, we're going to make America great. We're going to, I don't know, help cure America.
Yeah, that's true.
We're going to... Right? No, it's interesting. They're trying to make him look like a savior.
What was his slogan? And let's make America great again.
Yeah.
Again.
again. So this democracy, by the way, is nothing less than hypocrisy, right? This whole choice of the people and all that. Honestly, the system in the United States of America does not believe in that.
Mm.
The system itself, the democratic system itself does not believe in democracy with the definition that we already spelled out. And here are some of the examples of that, right?
Which we're going to have to save for the next show, inshallah, because we're out of time and we can't wait to hear those, Sheikh. Sorry to have to cut you short there. Sayyid Mehdi, Sheikh Ali, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. From myself and from our beloved guests, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye.
A symphony of nature. Oh, it's taking my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today, yeah. Allah, 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 Allah. I see the sun, the stars, the moon. I join them all in praising you. Allah, 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 Allah.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and on the eve of her birth anniversary, let us reflect on the words of Hazrat Zainab Kubra, peace be upon her, the granddaughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, when addressing the tyrant Yazid in his court in Damascus. The end of all tyrants is terrible, and God knows the misguided and the wrongdoers amongst you. Thank you.
what you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Dear friends, Salamu alaikum. So welcome to this program entitled Today's Special. We're going to speak about loneliness in Islam. First of all, let's see what date is today. Today, Saturday, is the 4th of Jamadiyul Awwal, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 29th of Azar, 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 19th of December, 2020 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's listen to chapter Ar-Ra'd, verse 28. Of the Holy Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم الذين آمنوا وتطمئن قلوبهم بذكر الله ألا بذكر الله تطمئن
Those who have believed and whose hearts are assured by the remembrance of Allah. Unquestionably, by the remembrance of Allah, hearts are assured.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Those who acknowledge the unity of Allah and accept His attributes and the prophetic mission of His Prophet, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, and embrace whatever has been revealed from him, Allah, and their hearts are set at rest by the remembrance of Allah, allow Allah to soothe their hearts regarding Allah's blessings and rewards, with the thought of Him and of His grace. For Allah's promise is decisive as nothing, and nothing will soothe the hearts better than His divine promises. To remember Allah does not mean merely paying lip service to Him, for what counts is thinking of Allah in all circumstances, in particular at the time of committing sin.
Sometimes I can't see where I'm supposed to go. Sometimes I speed up when I should take it slow. But through all my hard times, when I lose my way, you're concealing my mistakes, yeah. I know you're always by my side, never turning out your light. When I need you most, your stars will shine.
I feel lonely. What can I do? Feeling lonely is a normal thing and happens to everyone from time to time. In these instances, it is important to remember that you may feel lonely at this time, but you are not alone. It is important to combat this feeling head-on, since a repetition of this feeling could lead to depression and anxiety. Firstly, try and identify what is making you feel this way. There are many things you can do to boost your morale in order to combat this feeling. If it is a low self-esteem, start keeping a self-gratitude journal. This keeps a record of all positive, rewarding, and pleasant experiences you can look back to every night to increase joy. Positive self-talk on a daily basis, as well as keeping company around you that is encouraging and motivating, can help your overall mood.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with loneliness and the dangers of loneliness and how to cure loneliness. Human beings, as social creatures, cannot stand loneliness. It's most probably because of this that those criminals who are really very dangerous, they may be sentenced to confinement. And this confinement, I mean, in which they have no associate, no partner, or no roommate, is regarded as a kind of punishment for them. This is because in all people, there's a sense of seeking pleasure in just talking with others or in communicating with other people. Now we find that everybody should have defined for everybody should have defined for themselves a certain high aim, and in order to reach that aim, one has to make the most of one's own best in order to reach that or those that aim or those aims. For example, those people who want to become very knowledgeable should spend most of time in studying books, in reading, for example, good books or books that would benefit them, or books that are they find themselves very much interested in.
We're gonna look at coping with loneliness. Accept that you are lonely. You can be the type of a person who doesn't like to socialize at large events, who is an independent, self-reliant personality, or who has experienced trauma and prefers to stay alone. This is completely okay. Yes, it's okay to be lonely. However, we all feel the need to belong and connect with others, and when this need is not met, we begin to experience the ache that is loneliness. Loneliness is a feeling, not a fact or a lifelong certainty. By realizing this and understanding how your brain computes feelings, we can move a step closer to accepting what we are experiencing. With true acceptance only can we then get into the right thinking space to deal with it. Sometimes, this true acceptance can mean facing your fears and stop running away from what we know deep down to be our true feelings.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the Infallibles, lessons from the life of the Infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
Now, the unexpected blessings of being alone. Believe it or not, we are all alone. In all of this, we realize that I'm not alone in being alone. We all are alone, even in an ocean of people. No matter who you are or how many people are around you, you are alone in what you are, answerable to the choices you make. The people around you may suggest or pressure you into specific choices, but you alone make the ultimate choice and bear the ultimate consequence of what these choices are. Everything from what you wear, who you trust, or how you plan your wedding is a result of your own choice. You're alone in society and in the sight of Allah as well. The aloneness is obvious when we do acts of worship that are individual, such as fasting, giving zakat, alms, and praying. But we are also alone in Hajj, even when surrounded by a million other Muslims. We are alone in that we have to consciously make the choice and intention to worship. We are alone in making sure we do Hajj in its true spirit.
When we examine some of the social ills that we have in our modern times, some of the difficulties that millions of people are going through, we will find that one of the greatest dangers today that is threatening our physical and psychological well-being is loneliness. In fact, loneliness is coined and termed as being the silent killer. You know, today in the West, especially in the United States, you will find that loneliness is killing more people than obesity, smoking combined, and lack of exercise. And we know these three are top killers. Smoking and how that ruins one's health, lack of exercise, and obesity. Today, official statistics are revealing that loneliness is claiming more lives. It has become more dangerous than these three combined, which is very serious. Some studies reveal that 40% of adults, 40%, admit to experiencing serious loneliness in their lives. It is very important for us, my dear brothers and sisters, to be aware of the dangers of loneliness. Because loneliness does not discriminate. No matter who you are, whether if you're from the high class, from the middle class, from other classes, whether you're rich, you're poor, whether you're famous or not, loneliness is taking a toll on everyone. On everyone, even those famous people.
Dear friend, thank you for joining us. This is the end of this episode of today's special. Inshallah, we'll continue this topic on the next episode. Be with us. Fi amanillah.
around yourself. Can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue. Planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun. Such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves. Isn't this proof enough for us?
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.